Hi, I'm Megan.
And I'm Sarah.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us from preschool to teen.
This is the show where we help you feel better about the mom you are and share our own parenting tips and personal stories.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 141 of the Mom Hour. This is a very special Friday episode, and we're really excited to have you guys listening today and for the interview that Megan and I are going to set up in just a minute. So this episode is sponsored by responsibility.org. And Megan, why don't you tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, so you guys know that I've worked with responsibility.org for a while now. There's a team that I've worked with directly as a talk early blogger, and that's one of their underage drinking prevention programs. It's a program specifically geared towards parents with kids aged 6 to 9, and it's really all about having those conversations you have with your kids, modeling responsible alcohol behavior in front of your kids, having conversations. It's really about talking and starting the talking early. And so we're excited about our interview today because it's with a dad blogger, and we don't often get to talk to dads.
Not only do we not talk to dads very often, we really haven't tackled a lot of dad topics, and I'm really excited for the conversation you guys are about to hear. So one of the things that we wanted to talk about with Wit was dad stereotypes. Megan, you and I have been around the blogging world a long time. We, of course, identify with mom bloggers and women who write about the experience of motherhood. But sometimes an unfortunate side thing that happens is that dads are either sort of left out of the conversation or in a lot of cases kind of lumped into these really terrible stereotypes like the hapless, clueless dad or the dad who's not showing up for his kids or, you know, the dad who can't figure out like how to button up a onesie. And sometimes it's meant in fun and to sort of like, I don't know, build camaraderie with other moms. But I think you and I really both think that's baloney, and thinks dads deserve more.
That's so true. And Whit Honey is actually our guest today. He's the author of the Parents Phrase book and an activist, which I love about him. He's co-founder of Dads for Change, which is an organization dedicated to progressive parenting. He writes for like everybody and has been around forever and is an all around great guy and is also very much all about dads being involved and busting up those stereotypes. So really excited about his interview.
Yeah. And so the combination of our work with responsibility.org and Wit's work with them, the conversation you're going to hear is really about all of the above. We talked to Wit about addressing those stereotypes and sort of giving dads a voice. And if they are feeling lumped into those categories, how to stick up for dads, how to not really stand for that kind of really potentially limiting assumptions we make about the role of dads. And then we really go into the importance of some of these tough conversations about alcohol, about, safety and kids growing up and how important it is for dads to be a part of those conversations, the way some dads might handle those conversations differently than moms and how we can support each other as parents and co-parents. It was a great conversation. So should we get right to it?
Let's do it.
Hey, Wit, welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hello, thanks for having me.
We're so excited that you're here, and we are going to talk about busting up some dad stereotypes, which I'm really excited about. We haven't really had a dad blogger on our show. We've had a couple men on our show, but I'm really excited for this conversation. So, Megan, do you want to kick this off?
Sure. Well, I'm really excited that we're going to have responsibility.org back as a sponsor. I have worked with responsibility.org and their Talk Early campaign now for several years, and they were one of our very first sponsors. And what's really great about the organization is that they're really all about encouraging conversations with our kids. So specifically around alcohol responsibility, but going deeper than that, just the difficult conversations and the importance of having them frequently and not necessarily like that big uncomfortable talk, but just making those conversations part of our lives. So I'm really glad that we're going to have Wit on the show today and that we're talking about just dad stereotypes and busting those and dads having those tough conversations with their kids and all kinds of stuff, Dad. So hey, Wit, we're just so glad to have you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So Wit, I'd like to lead off with a question that kind of sets the tone for the whole interview, I think, and that is, what dad stereotypes have you encountered? And I'm especially curious what's changed. You've been writing about fatherhood for a while. So what's changed since you started writing about fatherhood?
You know, I don't understand stereotypes, first of all. Here, let me just open with a tangent about stereotypes. There's such a weird thing, right? Saying someone does this or that because they're this or that, you know, and everybody right. is this collection of parts, whether it's our gender, ethnicity, age, nationality, religion, sexuality, ability, whatever. So by the time you get to that dad label, it's like the Venn diagram of identity is basically a kaleidoscope, right?
Yeah. Right.
And so, but you know, we sure do love them, love our stereotypes. So to answer your question, I guess dads are pretty often you see dads portrayed as these dumb, bumbling, incapable, you know, of a simple task, immature, big child, irresponsible sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or even worse, they're distant and uninterested, you know, like emotionally unavailable, and then they're brutally hard on their kids.
Right.
And so I feel like we see those stereotypes primarily in pop culture, TV and yeah. movies. And over the past decade, as you said, I've been doing this a while. I started when my first was born, and he's 14 now. So over the past decade plus, I feel like we've seen a real shift toward dads that are multidimensional and mm-hmm. they're mm-hmm. you know, hands-on and deeply involved in all aspects of parenting, from changing diapers to the tough talks and everything that goes with that. So in my opinion, the pop culture is starting to catch up to reality, whether mm. it's a stay-at-home dad folding laundry with his kids, or a dad in a airport in Cairo reading a bedtime story to his kid in Tucson.
Yeah.
The strength of being emotionally invested and the rewards thereof, I think portraying a much more honest picture of fatherhood, which is awesome because that actually shapes new realities for future generations. You know, it's all circular.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's funny how those cultural preferences change too over time, how things that were funny, like in a 90s sitcom, just aren't funny anymore. They really never were, but people would laugh at them anyway, and now it's completely changed.
I remember when I first started, blogging as a dad, and there weren't labels for any of that. You're just a parent who happened to blog. But I remember making a couple of Mr. Mom references, and that's how I knew that there were other dads doing it, because I got taken behind the woodshed for my Mr. Mom references.
We all have to learn somehow,
Yeah, and some of these are just so deeply entrenched, and I think it's really encouraging that you say you're seeing a shift. I think it's got to be a slow change, because I think a lot of that is still out there, unfortunately. Even if we know individual dads doing all the things you say, Whit, the labeling and the stereotyping is pretty pervasive. I want to bring up something that's maybe a little bit delicate, but that is that I think moms sometimes contribute to this, including moms on social media and in blogging and who have a platform. And maybe it's unintentional, but I think sometimes either because it's funny or because we're looking for a shared experience of, oh man, like my husband dressed the toddler today, like look what he's wearing to daycare. I think sometimes we unknowingly or knowingly contribute to that. And I'm curious if this is something also that you've observed, or even in individual partnerships, if there's things moms are doing that's really reinforcing those stereotypes instead of letting dads be who they are.
Yeah, definitely. And what's interesting is that conversely, things that dads put out there that do well and then possibly go viral are things that are just them combing their daughter's hair or something like that, which it's fantastic. I have friends who I'm sure we all know who have had that experience, and it's wonderful, and I'm happy for them. But really, they're just doing what a dad does,
right?
You know, and for it to be treated as some novelty, I think the thing that rubs people the wrong way in that regard, and this is primarily online, because I think jokes are easier to recognize, in person,
mm-hmm.
and so it's the reinforcement of those stereotypes that we were talking about a moment ago, where the biggest offender is probably insinuating that a partner is useless, right? Mm. And so for like a mom, everyone knows this mom has two kids, and she says, oh, I have three kids, implying that the dad is one of them.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure that it's meant, maybe that their husband or boyfriend or whatever is, silly and fun and playful. not necessarily.
I don't know that that's what they mean.
I'm trying to be nice about it.
I just fielded that comment at a party the other day, and believe me, that was not how it was meant. It's pretty out there. Yeah.
So the gut reaction is like, well, why'd you marry somebody
like
that?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, I could totally see that. And do you, I mean, just speaking of hearing those, you know, I feel like I'm in a place where I could say something to another mom and just be like, well, you know, and kind of gently direct the conversation back the way I kind of would rather hear it go when talking about a dad. But I can see it being a little harder for you, Whit, in that situation, because almost because you would feel like you were, I don't know, not validating the mom's experience or whatever. So I'm wondering if you found ways to address those comments, or in any of your writing for Talk Early, if you've been able to kind of, if it's created conversations or interesting, you know, comments or eye-opening comments from dads or moms about those kinds of stereotypes and actually how to tackle them head on with, but still understanding that it is so deeply ingrained.
Certainly. And
yeah,
I think the first thing, as you saw in my last answer, I try to be as nice about it as possible. and listen. That's always important. That's the part of talking that people seem to forget is the listening part, right? But I just keep doing my thing. And so there's this saying, which I would love to know who coined it, but every time I look it up, it's just like Mark Twain pinned it to his Pinterest board. but it's none of my business what other people think about me.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of my life trying to, you know, various levels of success. Lived to that, because I figure whatever lens that other people may view me, you know, they're coming from their own unique place and they're going somewhere else that I'm not. So it's like, why should our crossroads ruin my day?
Right.
But you know, as first of all, you gotta have a sense of humor. That'd be the main thing. And then, you know, maybe a silo full of salt grains. But when I do address the comments, the thing that happens more often than not, and this usually happens like in the supermarket checkout, because I'm not sure why. That's you'll spend that whole time in the store, never acknowledge anyone else, but when you check out, everybody's, you know, chummy.
Yeah, right.
And it's usually, and here's me adding my log to the stereotype fire. It's usually, you know, strangers of an age.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say things about, oh, it's daddy's day, or daddy is babysitting. And you know, that's a pretty easy conversation to jump into, because obviously I'd like to think it's coming from their own memories and thoughts about parenting and this antiquated idea of fatherhood, that when they see a man who is just happily confronting their understanding of what a dad is, it's this delightful novelty, you know, so they
think it's a positive comment.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, it's easy to say something like, well, you know, every day is daddy's day, or I'm not babysitting, I'm their dad. That's what dads do. But you can do it in such a way that maybe have a little bit of conversation. And if that doesn't work, then you just, you know, ram them with your cart.
That's usually my first choice. Just ram with the cart first and ask questions later.
You know, exactly. And I, to your point about the Talk Early post, so there was a post I wrote in June when they sent out some information about comparing the percentage of dads that talk about alcohol with their kids to the number of moms. Mm. And the numbers were strikingly low for everyone, but the dads especially came off looking pretty bad. And it kind of surprised me, because that's not my experience. So I decided that maybe I was living in this, you know, this online fatherhood community, which by just merely existing shows how involved these guys are, right? So maybe I'm living in this bubble. So I decided to have those conversations with my peers in the real world, quote unquote. And so whenever we'd go, you know, I'd take the boys to the park or the library, and we'd see other dads, which right there is another stereotype, right, about dads being out. And our streets are full of dads walking kids to school and stuff. So we'd have conversations about it. And I think most of them were as surprised as I was, because everybody thinks that they're doing doing right by that. But I think that there's a lot of assumption, which is my biggest takeaway from that, the information that responsibility.org shared with us, was that dads seem to build up upon this assumption. You know, we're applying common sense to about drinking to an audience that has no context for that. And I know that I'm guilty of that as well, because you just assume some things are known.
Right.
And maybe we're not digging deep enough or starting far enough back. So there's chapter three.
And not only are the dads in your community online involved, but they're also by nature of what they do communicators.
Right.
So that, but dads and moms, you know, in this space. So that adds another layer of sort of, we're not necessarily the norm.
Right. Your sample is not necessarily a representative sample.
Right.
That's really interesting. So I want to shift a little bit, and your kids are, your boys are 11 and 14, you said, right?
Yes.
So we have a lot of listeners of our show, and Megan and I both have kids. None of us has babies anymore. My youngest is about to turn 5, and that's the youngest of our combined kids. But in our listener community listening to this right now, we have a lot of new parents, a lot. And they come to this show, I think, in part to see glimpses of what's ahead. So I'm excited that the moms listening to this show get to hear a conversation about having tough conversations about alcohol, even if that conversation for them is several years down the road. So I want to kind of go back in time. And can you just tell us about just how you transitioned into your role as a dad and kind of what that's like for dads as they come into this role? And I don't mean just like the first week with a newborn at home, but it really takes time, at least Megan and I have found, to settle into your role as a parent and figure out what kind of parent you want to be. So what was that like for you?
You know, first of all, when you say our combined kids, I immediately thought of Voltron, and we should probably make that happen.
I can't decide which one gets to be the leg. I guess you need two for a leg, right?
Right. You know, well, I get this doesn't happen for everyone, but like the whole concept of fatherhood hit me immediately. And you said not necessarily from when they're an infant, but I mean, it really happened like immediately. You know, I remember after everything had kind of quieted down in the hospital, and the first thing I did was I went outside to call my parents. We lived in Seattle at the time, and my parents lived in Arizona. So I, you know, stood out in this dark drizzle of a Seattle dawn, you know, 4 a.m. sort of thing, calling my parents to apologize, because I just had no idea that you could feel that way. And so that changed my perspective like on a dime. But from there, my wife and I were both working in the restaurant industry at the time, and we set up our lives so that one of us was always home.
Okay.
So this was Atticus at the time, but then that was kind of our routine, and it was a good one. It worked for us. But then after Zane was born, I had the opportunity to leave that job and to pursue, you know, writing as a career. And so I think that being at home all of a sudden, working at home, is when I really started to form my own parenting style and to think about it. You know, it used to be there's just, we're all kind of like moving parts in this machine. But once I was home, a large portion of parenting fell to me just because of the flexibility and convenience. And I realized, you know, quickly that I wanted and would continue to be as hands-on in every aspect of everything, which is funny because now that they're a teen and a tween, they're the ones who are deciding how hands-on I am. But
like, you may think you want to be hands-on.
Right. Yeah. So are there pieces of advice that you're able to glean from that to give to newer dads now, or even to yourself as a new dad? Like, if you could go back in time and kind of fast forward to where you are now and glean that knowledge, what would you tell yourself?
We do a lot of time travel.
We do. Sometimes I tell
Megan. That's what this show is all about. Time.
I didn't know there was a sci-fi element. This is fantastic. So for brand new dads, I would say just embrace it. You know, it's like you don't realize how special things are in the moment, because it may not feel special in the moment. You know, you could be covered in any number of liquids coming out of your baby. It's like it's easy to get frustrated and to take it out on each other. You know, if you're in a situation where you have you and your partner are co-parenting. And the thing is, those are milestones that you may not recognize at the time, but you can't revisit those.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like change diapers. And if you're using a bottle to feed, take the graveyard shift. And just as the kids get older, you know, hold hands, sing songs, talk about everything, which talking about everything then makes it easier to talk about everything, you know, now as our kids get older.
Well, but, Yeah,
for myself, I was going to say, I'm sorry, but
no, go ahead.
In regards to if I could tell myself something, so my wife and I are pretty laid back. You know how when people have their second kid, they're a lot more, you know, free about everything.
Yeah.
We were like that with our first kid, which by the time Atticus was born, you would have assumed that we had like a dozen kids already. We were, we were pretty laid back. And yet I still, I'm a worrier, you know, on my mother's side. And I worry about things that there's no way I could have any control over this. Like, will they find happiness? Or, you know, are they seeing something in me that's negatively going to affect their life as they get older? You know, I'd lay awake at night thinking about things that I can't do anything about it. So if I could go back to myself, I would just say, you know, hey, get some sleep, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I want to comment on something that you said just recently, which was the amount of time that you were able to log when your babies were little and, you know, with your, the flexibility that came from working from home or being at home. And obviously not every family has that situation, but what I sort of took from that was you made it the norm to get in and do the everyday things that are kind of boring and dirty, but over time, those add up to a relationship with your kid. And I think we started talking about stereotypes and kind of how we've come far, and we have come far. But I think in some families where the disconnect is that dad may not be home as much, number one. And number two, mom sometimes has the ship running so tightly that dad may feel like there's not room to get in there and change diapers or be a part of the lunch packing or the everyday solutions. And that's, I think, I'm just encouraged to hear you talk, because I think that's the opportunity I think all dads have, probably regardless of work schedule, right? I mean, I'm sure you know families that maybe don't have a dad who's working from home, and yet that dad is still able to be just right down in there in the details of managing a family.
Oh, sir, for sure. And it's kind of a broad brush to paint with, but I think that if you want to be involved, you can find the ways to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone has a different schedule. Everyone has a different family dynamic. But with a few obvious exceptions that and someone may face in their life, if you want to be involved, you know,
right.
That means you take your kid to practice instead of watching the game or whatever it might be. It's as,
right.
It's easy as that. It's a decision that you make.
And sometimes I think it's the unglamorous work of especially the babies and the toddlers, that if you don't practice getting in there and figuring out how to swaddle the baby or like how the picky eater likes their sandwich cut, it's harder to sort of insert yourself later on. And I don't think that necessarily has to do with a work schedule. It just has to do with a desire to do it. I want to talk a little bit about co-parenting, which I think is related. And I'm very curious in all your, since you've been doing this, I'm sure observations have come out about not just dads, but how moms and dads work together. So what are the things you see in great co-parenting relationships, either your own or just that you've observed, about how, you know, how we can sort of play to each other's strengths and support one another as, you know, co-parents?
So I hope I don't sound like I'm being difficult or traumatic because
oh
I do
boy.
That.
You're fired.
I do that. Yeah. Get the shopping cart. I certainly believe that people parent differently because, you know, it's just that we're all individuals. But over the years, I've kind of conscious, but also subconsciously, I've found myself moving away from thinking of things as that's what dads do or that's what moms do. Because I suppose it started because so many of the stereotypes that we were talking about,
right?
You know, they're about gender roles, right?
Mm.
And they're applying them to parenting, and that doesn't fit my experience, my personal experience. So, for example, in our family, I'm the emotional one, far more than my wife. You know, but that's a stereotype you would hear the reverse of that. So I wear my heart on my sleeve constantly, and I don't hide that from the boys at all. In fact, I encourage it. You know, them to do the same. And my wife, or another stereotype, she's the handy one. She's the one that puts in the ceiling fans and builds all the IKEA everythings. You know, so it's, I think, part of redefining masculinity for the better. You know, this modern version requires stepping back and seeing where it went wrong.
Yeah.
Because, you know, let's face it, it has. And a lot of that is rooted in these stereotypes of masculinity, especially as it pertains to fatherhood. Mm-hmm. So I hope that not getting too off the thing. So
no, absolutely. Here.
Well, it occurs to me that it actually swings both ways too, because by you stepping up in owning your personality, right, it allows your wife to be who she really is. And how many moms do we know, Sarah, that we hear from who really don't want to be the one who is doing maybe the domestic stuff or the stuff that's typically supposed
or
to be
chaperoning field trips.
Right. The mom role.
Both hate to do.
But they feel like they're supposed to. And maybe if there was more room for everyone to just be who they are comfortably, then everyone could just find who they are and fill in the gaps.
And maybe that's at the root of my question about co-parenting. Bad question writing. I mean, I'm just giving myself a hard time. But how do any two people figure out how to complement each other's strengths? Because you're right, it isn't male or female or mom or dad. But I know in our marriage, there's just certain things that are I'm so glad that my husband has certain strengths so that I can let him shine in those areas. And you're right, it has nothing to do with gender. It's just like, oh, thank goodness we have a good balance with this, because I'm not strong in this area.
Exactly. I know, or at least I think it's really about understanding, you know, the strengths and weaknesses in our partners as individuals, not necessarily as a parent.
Right.
And then also being able to recognize, and this is the hard part, and accept them in ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then working together to kind of find the best path forward for everyone.
Right.
Yeah.
Knowing when to zig, when they zag, and being able to read a room.
Yeah.
So I think it's when we try to be something we're not that things tend to go south.
Well, yeah. And we hear from a lot of moms who want to do things the quote unquote right way. And maybe they've read the parenting books or they've decided something is the right way. And that, I think, is a dangerous way to lose sight of, you know, if you are a two parent household, you have two different humans who are able to set examples and lead and, you know, have relationships with the kids, which is great. It doesn't have to be. I guess my point was, if mom has decided that one way is the right way, the danger is that the other parent gets sort of left with what's left or left to follow along to something that's been prescribed instead of, like you said, reading the room and figuring out how each parent can contribute.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole because like you, I'm a tangenter. So is that a word? Tangenter?
It is now.
But I just also want to just kind of almost as an aside, point out that like as a divorced mom, what I'm also realizing is that two people don't necessarily add up to 100% of what your kids need.
Right.
One person can't, but two people don't always either. And so, you know, there might be gaps in what there's just always gaps. And that's why I think it's so important to have other people in your life as well who can fill in some of those gaps, whether it's, you know, mom and dad, maybe dad's emotional and mom's practical and that works out great. But what if mom and dad are both emotional? Then maybe, you know, it's like there's no, I guess, limit to the way you can lean on your tribe and pull in those resources around you. One person can't do it all, but sometimes two can't do it all. That's not really what we were talking about, but I just felt
perfect.
Compelled.
And that's one of the oldest sayings about parenting is that, you know, it takes a village, and it's popular and still popular today for that reason. It's very true. It's just kind of finding your village. You know, you don't necessarily have to give what you're given or take what you're given.
Right. Exactly.
Make your village.
Yeah. Well, I want to dig in because part of what we really wanted to talk about today was this Talk Early team that we're both part of and responsibility.org's data that they've been coming out with. And one of the things I really love about this organization is they're always studying and they're always trying to figure out, kind of take the pulse of how parents are interacting with their kids about these really tough conversations and where we can all do better. Speaking of a tribe, so it's not just on mom or it's not just on dad, but like all of us as a society can do better. So can we dig into this data a little bit and what it shows specifically about dads, but really about moms and dads?
Yeah, let's do it. I'll get my shovel.
Okay. So I'm looking at some of these numbers, and I did think it was interesting that moms report speaking with their children about alcohol more with dads, but not that much more. So 86% versus 80%. Did that surprise you?
I think, as you alluded to, and the numbers are really low for everyone.
It's
very surprising to me.
Yeah. And I'm also wondering if, you know, this is self-reporting and these are people who are recognizing that they're talking about these things. So sometimes I wonder if we're sharing messages without even knowing we're doing it. So we don't think we're talking about, but by not talking about something, we're talking about it. Does that make sense?
Well, of course, leading by example, you know, and
right.
You may not be talking to your kid about alcohol in this case, but you might be consuming alcohol in front of them in the way that you treat it, in the way that, you know, there are so many things that you're doing. They're always watching.
Yeah, they're out there. They're
darn
always watching. Yeah. The other thing I gleaned from some of this research, and there was a takeaway from Dr. Deborah Gilboa, who's a family physician and parenting expert. And I thought this was an awesome quote that can kind of, I don't know, sum up a lot of how these conversations happen. And it was, parents, don't have one 60-minute conversation with your kids. Have 60 one-minute conversations with your kids. I thought that was a brilliant way to sum up the importance of like ongoing talks. And what I was wondering if you can talk about if that's something that you found effective in the way you deal with your kids, instead of feeling like you have to sit down and have this heavy-handed conversation, having many little light conversations that just naturally fit into your life.
Certainly. I was, when I read that from her, it was one of those aha moments, like, you know, because everybody always, and it's not, there are several talks that parents need to have with kids.
Sure.
Nobody wants to have any of them.
Can we acknowledge that no one wants to do this?
Yeah, this is hard. Yeah. That's why we're having a podcast about it. Yeah.
But it's, we're putting pressure on ourselves, right? Because we build it up as this thing, you know, and the kids pick up on that, like, oh, this is going to be a big talk. And to break it down like that, that is the most, it's like, why didn't I think of that?
Right.
And
why didn't you coin
point,
that quote?
Exactly. Exactly. To your point about the examples, and that's part of it as well. I mean, it's just, it could be a word or two, like, you know, you're leaving a party and you're driving instead of, somebody else because they had a drink, you know, and just kind of pointing that out. And it's just little things, but they all build together.
Yeah.
It's,
and
I'm
going to jump in here too, because my kids are the youngest of our collective kids. And I think the earlier, it's almost easier when you start earlier, and I'm sure there's some research on this too, but you know, my kids aren't like dreading conversations with me yet. They'll talk about anything. They're very like judgment free about what we're talking about. So I actually think it's good. It's been good practice for me to bring up those tougher conversations as young as I feel comfortable in an age appropriate way, because I feel like it's giving me kind of like the practice for the harder, you know, things are going to get harder and we're going to have to go into more detail and talk about more issues as they get older. But I'm all about like planting the seeds as young as I can, including, you know, with my very young kids about alcohol.
Yeah. It doesn't even have to be, you know, serious conversation.
Right. I mean,
just any conversation that opens that door, makes it a little easier for later.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Specifically to dads, Whit, do you think that there is still some gendered stereotype around the way moms should talk to their kids versus dads, or the conversations they should be having versus, like, I could almost see it falling down, like, well, we have boys, so you have to have the sex talk with the boys because you're the dad, or, you know, like those kind of stereotypes. And I'm wondering if you've run across those, or if you saw any of that in your writing for Talk Early.
No, that's fine. Everything's fine. there is so much of that, right? And it's everywhere. You know, it's parents put it on themselves, society puts it on us, and it's everywhere. So, you know, to back up a little bit, that's depending on your own parenting situation. I mean, if you have somebody who's like, I'll take that, wonderful. I don't care. You know, it doesn't matter who it is. But at the same time, it shouldn't be one person's responsibility in a relationship to be, you know, it's like good cop, bad cop sort of thing. And you don't want to put your kids in a situation where they always look to one parent as the wise one and the other one as, you know, ATM or whatever it might be.
Right.
I'm curious, how this has played out as your boys have gotten older. Have you been practicing what you preach in terms of lots of little conversations? Are you finding that conversations get easier as you are more, you know, move through parenting, or is each new conversation sort of awkward and hard in its own special way?
That's like my life.
Again, everything's fine, right?
Yeah. Right. That's the tagline of my life. Yeah. Awkward in its own special way. So I'm in this situation now because the boys are 11 and 14 that I'm on both sides of this conversation fence, right? Mm-hmm. Where my youngest, Zane, won't ever shut up. You know, we're having conversations until he is asleep and then they start again. And then my 14-year-old, a conversation is basically me asking a question and his, you know, so in terms of, for me, it's easier to talk to the 14-year-old in terms of content. I'm more comfortable because I feel that at 14, you know, he gets to watch shows with me that the younger one doesn't and things like that. So I think that he's in a place where he could have some better context. But at the same time, it's really a process to get him to participate on his end. I know that he's listening. Mm-hmm. I know that he gets it. He's a good kid. You know, I get that. But I sure would love some sort of confirmation that he is receiving.
Receiving the signal.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. Whit, I have to tell you, my quiet one is 18 now, and you might never get it directly.
But Megan, I was going to prompt you to weigh in because Megan has four boys in a row, three of whom are into teenage years. So I was curious if you have seen like variance, Megan, in the way they receive conversations.
My 20-year-old was the one who would talk me until he fell asleep, and he's still like that. He will still say whatever's on his mind, and I always knew what was happening with him. And my 18-year-old is the one who just flies under the radar. He's that kid who he's reserved is the word I would use for him. So he'll tell me stuff if I really need to know it, but it takes a long. I've actually found that emailing works really well with him.
Right.
He will send me long emails. Yeah.
Exactly. But,
So
four of them. You're seeing all kinds of stuff.
Yes, exactly. So I think for me, and I discovered that kind of by accident. I don't even remember how I figured out the email thing. I think maybe he was in bed one night and I really wanted to talk to him about something and he had been kind of avoiding me and I just sent him an email and then he responded with like a novel.
Interesting.
And I thought, well, goodness, where's all these thoughts been all this time? So
that's a great idea because we just assume that when we say talk, we mean, you know, with our mouths.
Right. Yeah. But,
when I'll see the youngest isn't really on social media yet and the oldest is kind of barely on it, but he'll like something, you know, I'll share a talk early graphic on the Dads for Change Instagram page and he'll like it. I'm like, oh, I'm really getting through to him.
Yeah. Right.
That little
we're
heart.
Bonding.
That little heart means so much.
Right. It really does though. I mean, we're living in a world or in an age now where that really does mean something. I mean, that's acknowledgement and public acknowledgement from your kids.
And I think it's easy to forget that we've had decades of learning how to be in a conversation, how to engage in a two-way relationship, and they are still learning. So hopefully that's some kind of hope that, like you said, Whit, it's an indicator that it's sinking in, even if grunting is the reply.
Right.
I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know. Well, this has been amazing. I feel like we could keep talking for hours. But Whit, before we wrap up, is there any other encouragement you would give to moms and dads about having tough conversations with their kids about alcohol, about anything? Is it a just do it thing, or what? How can we encourage parents to just start to have these conversations?
They could listen to this podcast.
Yeah, that's a good start.
Well, if they're here, they've already done that, so they're on their way.
Check.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I think it's kind of building as you go, rather than having this date circled on the calendar for on this day we're going to have that talk. You know, just get it going. You know, and I know for myself, and I assume for all of us, and there's always room for improvement. I don't think any of us are trying to pretend that we have all the answers or we're doing it perfectly. You know, but at the end of the day, what is parenting if not making the world a little better?
Right.
So, if you can do that through a little bit at a time, rather than all at once, go for it.
I
flex
love that.
Those muscles.
I love that. And that there's no one right way to do it, right? Our kids are they don't know, they only have one set of parents in most cases, or a small group of adults who are shepherding them. So to them, they're not comparing your alcohol talk to like the kid down the blocks, you know? Right. So there's no
rating.
It's not a 5-star system yet. So
on Yelp.
They'll find it. Someone's going to have an app. They're going to find a way.
Terrible, terrible alcohol awareness talk. 1-star. No, but so for that reason, I feel like we can just do our best. There's no one right way. Yeah.
It's better to say something and maybe mess it up a little bit than to say nothing and definitely miss the opportunity entirely. Yeah. So
I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Whit, thank you so much for being here. And our listeners can head to the show notes at themomhour.com, and we will link to some of Whit's writing for Talk Early and all the great work that he's doing. So you can go find him and follow him. And this was fun. Yeah. Thanks so much.
And thank you to responsibility.org for sponsoring this episode as well. And they've got lots of great resources on the site that you can check out. And if you follow that Talk Early hashtag and pretty much any social media, you'll also find some great discussion about all of the stuff that we talked about today and more.
All right. Thanks, everybody.